All right, thanks everybody. Good morning. We are a well-oiled machine here. So what just happened? Like, the CEO of SUSE just came out to the OpenSUSE conference. I don't know if that was, is that a first or potentially a first, but it's just one last fat round of applause for DP for coming out. He's a great guy. One of the things that he alluded to was just like purpose, right? And just that's just something I want to go back to. But who am I? So my name is Rick. I think I've gotten to know some of you over the last year and a half that I've been here at SUSE. And I am the general manager of the Linux division. So that means all of the things that SUSE does to build Linux is within the team that I lead. So you probably would think that I'd get on stage and have a deep technical talk about different aspects of building Linux, but I'm not going to. Today, I just want to talk a little bit, and really from my heart, about my experiences with the OpenSUSE community and with other communities. I have a lot of affection for the OpenSUSE community. Let me just start with a little story. So I arrived in Nuremberg last night, and I went to the office, and I saw a bunch of my team members. I saw some community members, and you know, they said, "What happened to you? Like, your hair is shaggy, your eyes are bloodshot, your whiskers are all white. Like, what the heck? Is DP really like working you that hard?" I said, no. I just came back from an adventure vacation. I was, you know, off hiking around deserts and et cetera. We do work hard, but it's not because DP makes us. It's because SUSE is an important project. It's important to the open source communities in general. It reminded me of another experience that I had with a different kind of open source community some years ago. Let's say 2020, maybe something. No, it must have been 2019 or something. It was before COVID. I was looking for a new job. I was between jobs, and I got invited to interview at an organization called the Wikimedia Foundation. Those are the people who run Wikipedia, and before I went and interviewed, I said, I can't go because I have this adventure vacation planned, and I was like on some tropical island in the Caribbean. And the night before I flew to go home and then to go to San Francisco for the interview, I accidentally left the door to my bungalow open a crack. And every mosquito in Barbados came into my bungalow, and they bit me all over the face and all over my left arm while I was sleeping. So I woke up in the morning covered with hundreds of mosquito bites, got on the plane, and by the time I got to San Francisco, they had kind of like gotten hard, and some of them were scabs, and I just looked terrible, and I was sunburned, and I spent the whole day, like 12 hours there, just interviewing and talking to people and meeting people. No one said a word about the fact that I was completely covered in hundreds of sores. And so I took a couple things away from that. First of all, like, the people at Wikimedia are really nice, kind people. That was the first thing. But also, I discovered during the process of meeting everyone that they were really driven with a really unified sense of purpose. And around that, they had built up a lot of governance to make sure that everyone in that community was like unified around that purpose. So if like thinking about I put them like way over here in terms of communities that I've worked with, like one purpose, massive, like really rigorous governance to like make sure that everyone like met that purpose, met those standards. It was really an extraordinary amount of process and overhead. But if you think about the impact that Wikipedia and Wikimedia has on the world, you know, it's probably because they are so focused on a purpose and have so much governance to stay there. So I didn't end up taking that job, though. But I did stay in open source. but I decided to go into a startup, and I was working in a startup with some friends of mine. It was really fun. It was an open source project, you know, so I stayed in open source, but I really lost that sense of purpose, you know, that sense of like meaning from the job. Like it felt really much more like being part of a business than being part of a community. And so then I think in once last year, when SUSE reached out, I really jumped at the opportunity, right? I really wanted to come here because like through all my time in open source, like I always thought of SUSE and the SUSE community as like such an important part of open source and just like the just a stalwart contributor or almost like a pillar of the open source community for years and years and years and just that massive staying power. And so I was really interested in recapturing that sense of purpose in my work life. So I know DP had to leave, so I can talk about him now. But my last interview in SUSE, so you know, they didn't just turn a switch. I had to actually like get the job and interview, and I went through all the different, you know, interview processes. You know, Jeff was on one of my panel interviews, and Mateus and other people that you know. But my last interview was with DP. He was the last sort of, you know, veto source. And all I remember discussing with him was the importance of community and open source ethics. Like, that was all he was screening me for. And I think that's really telling about SUSE and OpenSUSE. All right, so what do I do here? So as I said, I lead the team that builds SUSE Linux. And that includes a significant number of people who build and contribute to OpenSUSE. Right, so a lot of my team members are really active in the OpenSUSE community. And so there's sort of a blurring between, for me, work for SUSE Linux and work for OpenSUSE that my team does. And then there's other budget things like you know, the money that we spend on the servers and the infrastructure and all that kind of stuff and conferences and et cetera. And so, like, over in the year and a half, I've come to feel, you know, OpenSUSE is, like, way over here compared to Wikimedia, right? So we, I think, there's a lot of, I'd say, like, and again, I'm like, speaking from the heart, like, a lot of fragmentation of purpose that I see here. Like, when I talk to different people in the OpenSUSE community, their goals for OpenSUSE and their reasons for contributing are very diverse. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It's an interesting thing. But it comes with very little governance, right? So so what do I mean by that? Well, first I want to say about OpenSUSE and SUSE Linux. From my point of view, and again, you know, SUSE Linux, OpenSUSE, these kind of mixed together in terms of, you know, my responsibilities in terms of leading engineering teams and other teams. It's not a very complicated relationship. In other open source projects that I've worked on, it's complicated because the open source product is like the top of the funnel for the enterprise product, right? Which, like in those situations, then like the sales team would always be complaining, oh, our biggest competitor is open source, we shouldn't have an open source version, or we need to differentiate from the open source version, you know, and it just became complicated and a little bit like hostile. And I really appreciate that we, inside SUSE, don't have to hold back from OpenSUSE. Like, we don't hold back. We don't really differentiate because SUSE Linux is about enterprise requirements, certifications, lifecycle support, like these kinds of things. And so that creates, to me, like a very healthy relationship between SUSE and OpenSUSE and the OpenSUSE community. And I mentioned, you know, how much we do these investments. So, all right. This is actually not my first time running the distribution. If you can believe it, there's probably, I don't know if I have any peers who have run more than one Linux distribution in their lives. So I thought, you know, I wanted to talk about some of the differences that I observed when I worked at Canonical and I was running the Ubuntu project, which I did from like 2009 to 2017 about. So I would say like Ubuntu was like more like here. They were like more a bit in the middle, like not so unified and so much governance, but also not as loose and diverse as OpenSUSE. Now again, like I'm not here to tell you all what to do. I'm just here to share my insights about other successful projects. So one thing about Ubuntu was there was a sort of clarity of purpose, at least in for a while when I started there. Like, we were going to create a premium open source desktop, and we were going to get that thing pre-installed everywhere. And that was, like, the whole community, like, loved that vision. And in fact, when I remember when Canonical moved away from that, it created a lot of difficulty with the community because the community didn't necessarily want to move. But that was still their vision. And Canonical was like, well, you know, we're more about mobile, and then, like, we're more about servers. So before that, though, there was some fragmentation, like OpenSUSE, like different goals and stuff. But that was managed in a really systematic manner. So for instance, they had something called the Community Council. And to me, that's a bit akin to the OpenSUSE board, right? And one of the main things that they did was they oversaw the creation of teams. Right, and so what is a team? A team was basically a structured approach for people could get together and support themselves and shared goals, right? But allowed projects to go beyond individuals, right? So I think a lot what I observe at OpenSUSE is like, if there's a project, there's a person who's driving that project. It's a person's project, like there's not a team project. And if that person moved on from that project, it would... you know, probably the project would not get handed over, or they'd have to find another person to hand it over to. Whereas the teams allowed projects to go beyond individuals, it allowed to bring on board more people onto the team. So there were some examples, like there was a translations team. It was just like a group of people who were very passionate about providing the distro in every language. And there was a documentation team. But also there were like derivatives, right? So like the main thrust of Ubuntu was built around GNOME, but then there was like the KDE folks who drove Kubuntu because they really wanted to have a KDE-based distribution. So there was a team around that. And when those teams formed, it allowed investment, and it created a structure where you could interact with the team that's like driving that project. And that was not just like one person. And then there's another aspect of it, which was called the technical board. And this was like for people who were like the most trusted technical decision makers about like guiding the project. Mostly people who work for Canonical, but not only them. And that they provided a lot of transparency about decisions and would have discussions about the technical direction of the product in a public way. And I get a lot of feedback that it's like, hey, it's hard to see where SUSE's going. Like, we're in the OpenSUSE community, like what SUSE's plans and everything. And like for me, like the technical board at Ubuntu really created the structure for how that technical direction was communicated, and there were just kind of rules and governance. Like, they would report out on a cadence, and they would, you know, it was expected that they would have certain kinds of discussions in a transparent environment. I know I would say we kind of sort of used a mailing list in that way. There's another thing that Ubuntu had that other projects like Python has, which is a dictator for life. I don't know if you're familiar with that notion, but the idea is like there's one person who's an ultimate decision maker who can basically unblock any decision within the project. So if anyone gets stuck, if any discussions or projects get stuck, that can be unblocked by that dictator for life. But I'm not sure that makes sense for the OpenSUSE community. Like, I haven't ever seen anyone successfully add a dictator for life who is not like the founder of the project, right? Like, Guido didn't come to Python like last year, and everyone said, oh, he should be the dictator for life, right? I saw the Qt community try to add that sort of after they got spun out of Nokia. They sort of wanted to do that, but since like there was no like natural person to have that role, it didn't really work out. But anyway, I thought for completeness, I would mention that. So, you know, community council to handle community governance, technical board to handle technical governance, and then a, you know, this ultimate decider to keep projects moving. So, okay, so given that, like, SUSE's way over here, like, what does that mean for someone like me, right? So I've got, like, all these resources, and I'm trying to interact with the community. I'm trying to help the community be as healthy as possible. But, like, what's my API for interacting, right? It's like, it feels like when I first started programming, and you would just write to memory anywhere between zero and the upper bounds of memory, right? There's no API. So anyone can just write to me, you know, my memory, and I can write to other people's memory. But then there's things get missed that way, right? Important things, like I had a discussion with some people once, and I responded by emailing them directly, and someone said, that's not really proper or appropriate, that actually that email should be sent to the mailing list, right? And that's like, well, you know, how do I... What's the structure that like lets me know how I am expected to interact with the community in a productive way, and vice versa, right? So how do we get feedback from the community? Or what are the structures in place for that? How do we guide investments to the community? What are the structures in place for that? All right, so in summary, before I do, Doug, am I supposed to take questions? Did Doug bail on me?
You can take
do I have time, or did I? Are we out of time? Okay, so I'll take some questions about anything. If anyone has any, I'm happy to take some questions about anything at all related to SUSE, Open SUSE. But I guess, like in summary, what I'd like to leave you with is just some like thoughts, some questions, like how do we organize segments of the community around shared purpose? Right? How does that get like crystallized, shared? How do those people get empowered? How do we amplify the people who are working towards a shared purpose? And I know I talk a lot about Ubuntu because that was like I had a lot of experience there, but there's other communities that have governance structures. So my question is, like, what can we learn about governance from those other projects? So thank you. I look forward to continuing to deepen my relationship with this community. I'm starting to feel part of the community. I'm Rick Spencer 3, all one word, just Rick Spencer 3 on like social media. And sometimes I blog about Open SUSE and my experience with it if you want to like do some searches. So, okay, thank you very much.
So questions, raise your hand and I'll get to you. So I'm just going to start here and then over to Richard.
So thank you very much for your informative talk. I'm come at like a third party. I'm most time working as an integrator at clients, and the question arises always when some new package must be submitted to the Open SUSE, and I would like to know how the process actually like. Maybe it goes to the Open SUSE first, and then later in the more enterprise distribution. It will be very fun to know how it actually works.
So I think you're asking, how does a package go from being submitted into Tumbleweed to end up in Enterprise Linux? I would happily answer that question, but Jeff Mahoney is here, who is like the super expert on that. Jeff, would you mind answering that briefly for him?
Sure. So everything that ends up in our enterprise products goes through the feature request process. So if there's a package in OpenSUSE that you'd like to see in SLES, we can get it into our feature request process, and it will go through a review to make sure that's something that we can support at an enterprise level. And that's how it ends up. To start that process, typically you'd talk to whoever your point of contact at SUSE is. So whether that's going to be a salesperson or if you have direct access to us, to our product management team. That's how you'd get that request injected into our processes.
Did that answer your question? Okay.
Hi, Rick.
Hey, Richard.
Really like your talk. I just, that way you describe sort of OpenSUSE in comparison to other projects with that sort of lack of shared purpose and diversity, it struck me as you were saying it, like, have you considered the possibility that actually SUSE and OpenSUSE mirror themselves rather heavily in that area? You know, we talk a lot at SUSE of being, you know, one company with a shared purpose and enterprise vision and whatever. Ooh. But when you actually look at how that's done in the ground in the company, you know, you've got Rancher doing its thing, you've got UC doing its thing, you've got BCL doing its thing, and there's sometimes some attempt to draw that thing together. But it, in some regards, it's really similar to what we see in OpenSUSE. So maybe this is something we need to kind of fix on both ends. Because it's almost like there's a habit of copying each other in these kind of spaces.
Yeah, could be. So I think Richard's saying there's maybe a little yin and yang where, like, you know, the way SUSE as a corporation or a company runs itself sort of mirrors the way the community does, and there might be something to that. I would say. I don't know, like the way that you like influence change within the company, and the way, like, I think the OpenSUSE community is actually in a better, they're in a good position to actually just decide like what kind of community they want to be. That's why I'm very careful to point out, like, you know, maybe everyone likes being here and that suits everybody, and that's fine. You know, if that's like an actual, like, intentional decision of the community. I do talk to a lot of people who do sort of, you know, kind of wish that OpenSUSE was a little bit over here, but they don't, because they're over here, it's hard to like get the ball rolling to nudge it this way. So, but sure, yeah, and we can talk about SUSE dirty laundry anytime. Probably this isn't the perfect venue for that, but okay, any other questions?
Any other questions? Here.
So I had just more comments, and we had talked about this earlier, so I just wanted to get into this a little bit. Richard, with your question.
Wait, Jeff, can you introduce yourself maybe?
Hi, I'm Jeff Mahoney. I've been a member of the OpenSUSE project since the very beginning. I'm currently serving as a VP for Linux systems within SUSE. So he leads the Linux division. I do the development part of it. Or not personally, I have many people that I work with that do that. But in referencing what Richard just said and how SUSE and OpenSUSE sort of mirror each other like that, there's a limit to how much we can influence the rest of SUSE. And it's all open source, but as we've seen in Rick's talk, there's a lot of different ways to do open source. And so that's where some of that diversity comes from. But I don't think that part of it actually mirrors how things work in OpenSUSE. I think it's more the Linux division mirrors how OpenSUSE works to a certain extent. And I don't want to get into too much SUSE dirty laundry here, but over the past year, I've put a bunch of effort into trying to put some structure around how we do things internally as well. And that involves having like a technical committee, the architecture forum. And obviously we don't have as much of a community relationship, but having actual structure around decision making gives people that purpose. And I've actually gotten a lot of feedback internally about, like, you know, hey, you know, now I know who to ask for what, how to get it, what the process is. This is hugely beneficial to just my day-to-day. And I've been thinking about that for the last year or so in the OpenSUSE context as well, since last year's OpenSUSE conference, where we started to have a lot of these conversations. And for the past 2 days, the OpenSUSE board has met in person in the Nuremberg office. It wasn't really published because we didn't actually start with an agenda. And so we had no actual idea of what we were going to talk about. But one of the things that we ended up discussing is exactly this, the governance topic. And obviously the board isn't empowered to say, hey, this is the way that we're going to do things now. But we do want to put together proposals. And I don't have enough details to share about that right now because, I mean, we've only had this conversation for 2 days. It's a much longer conversation. But in terms of a general model, something I'd like to see is at the top we have the board just like it is now. And this would take that, you know, benevolent dictator for life role in some other projects that doesn't suit OpenSUSE at all. But the general idea is that the board wouldn't have these responsibilities itself. It would be delegated to three standing teams, committees, councils, whatever you want to call it. One for technical topics, one for community topics, and that includes conferences, community organization, marketing, things like that. And the last would be like legal slash finance, which largely maps to the Geekos Foundation right now, but that's not written into anything really. So that's at the high level what we're thinking. And we're going to cover this a little bit in the board talk tomorrow afternoon. But I thought it would be really wasteful to have a day and a half pass without the opportunity for people to actually talk about this, bring me feedback, bring other board members feedback, think about your own ideas for this. And so I know that there is, we have a tradition of having very little structure, and I know a lot of people like that. But I think it ends up being a challenge for new people in the community to figure out where they can slot in. So people want to come and say, hey, you know, I'd like to work on marketing type things. Who do I talk to? And I actually ran into this a lot when Rick first came on board. He's like, oh, who do I do? How do I do this in OpenSUSE? And the answer every single time was, oh, you need to talk to this person. It wasn't, oh, this committee is responsible for this. This is a role that is established within the process. It's just, this person does this. You need to go talk to them. And I can give that feedback because I know who would be doing these things. But if you're from the outside, how would you do that? This is the API Rick's talking about. And so having a little bit of structure around that, I think ends up enabling us to grow the community because it's easier for people to come in and join and know exactly where they can contribute and have, you know, a clear API, if you want to call it that, to join. And that doesn't mean that, you know, the work that people do now goes away or that, you know, your sense of purpose goes away, but just that there's a little bit more structure around it. So I'll be here today and tomorrow and Saturday. If you have questions, comments, whatever, please just come and talk. Because obviously this isn't something that the board just does. This is a community. We need to talk about it. We need to figure out where we want to go. So thank you.
All right. That's it. Are we on schedule, Doug? Or did...
We could take probably one more question if anyone has.
Okay.
If not, we can...
Why don't we call it? If anyone has a question for me, I'm going to be here on and off for the next 2 days. I do have some meetings, unfortunately, in the office, but I'll be coming... It's only a 7-minute walk away, so I'll be coming back and forth. But do, like, I'm here for you. I'm here to talk. So just if you have any questions or concerns or thoughts, or if you want to party, just come find me. So thanks a lot, everybody. Appreciate it.